Folks, Field of Greens is the healthiest thing I do every day, and I want you on this journey with me. Why? It's literally one scoop a day. It tastes great. I love the fruit flavors particularly, and it's completely improved my life and my health. This is nutrition the way nature intended. When I began taking a hard look at why I wasn't feeling good and why I felt unhealthy, why I was gaining weight, why I was losing energy, it wasn't just because I had hit my 50s. No, it was because I wasn't getting the right amount of fruit and vegetables in my diet. And listen, I'm just too busy to go to the store, clean up the vegetables, cook vegetable dinners, and make sure I hit the fruit. A Field of Greens stepped in. One scoop of powder in my drink or on my eggs in the morning, and boom, I was off and feeling better. And suddenly, I was losing weight. I was sleeping better. My metabolism went up. My blood sugar went down. My cholesterol went down, and my weight went down. And my doctor said, hey, whatever you're doing, keep it doing. You know what that is? It's Field of Greens. That's what I've been doing. Field of Greens is radically different. Each organic fruit and vegetable was medically chosen to support heart and vital organ health. I trust Field of Greens to keep me healthy. I promise you, you're going to love this product. But if for any reason you don't, they'll give you 100% money back guarantee. Now, you're going to get 15% off your first order, plus free rush shipping because of the incredible partnership we have here at Just the News with Brick House Nutrition, and of course, Field of Greens. All you got to do to take advantage of this offer, visit fieldofgreens.com and use the promo code JustNews. That's promo code JustNews at fieldofgreens.com. Don't wait. Go to fieldofgreens.com today. Use the promo code JustNews for 15% off. Hello, America, and happy Thursday. A lot of news breaking around the world today. We're going to try to get you up to speed on it. The most important one with extraordinary geopolitical repercussions emanating from Washington. The Senate leader, Chuck Schumer, usually portrays himself as an ally of Israel, today did something extraordinary, and it has set this town aflame. He called on Israel to hold new elections and try to oust the Israeli prime minister. That is an extraordinary event. We normally speak with one voice in the United States when it comes to foreign policy. Chuck Schumer violated that rule. Secondly, we cry election meddling when Russia does something in our election. But here, the Senate leader, I assume with the blessing of President Joe Biden, meddled in Israeli politics in an internal election matter. It is extraordinary for what it says, for what it does. It's not going to stop Benjamin Netanyahu. He's going to finish the job of Hamas, but it could drive a rift between Israel and the United States, unlike one we've seen in a long time. And more importantly, it may also set the stage for a continuing civil war, a continuing exodus in the Democratic Party of Jewish voters who no longer feel like their Democratic Party is supporting their homeland, their policies. And there's been such a conflict in Joe Biden saying, I stand behind Israel, but everyone's always constantly stabbing Israel in the back with little shiv knives. And I think that today's moment will resonate for a long time on the world stage. It puts every ally in the world of the United States on notice that, hey, we may meddle in your politics whenever we want, but if you do it on ours, oh, we're going to cry foul. We're going to complain. We're going to whine. What an extraordinary act of hypocrisy and arrogance in America displayed by Chuck Schumer today. We're going to ask our first guest about that and a whole lot more, Fred Flights, former chief of staff to the National Security Council, longtime CIA analyst, one of the best national security experts I've ever had the chance to work with as a journalist. He'll kick us off tonight. That's a really fun conversation. And then in the second block, we are going to talk to the head of the Heritage Foundation's Oversight Project about a story we broke this morning. And I'm really excited about that because there's so much going on in the Hunter Biden family story. This one may be the most important one that I've done in a while. And that is because we now have overwhelming proof, documentary proof that the House Impeachment Committee has obtained and validated that the sitting son of a vice president, yep, Hunter Biden, back in 2016 when his dad was still in office as vice president, worked with his partners to try to help a Chinese company, one that they knew was tied to the Chinese government. Hunter Biden called one of its officials the effing spy chief. James Biden said they knew the chairman of the company they were working with, EFC China, was tied to President Xi, the president of China. So they knew they were dealing with someone very close to the communist government. They tried to help that company purchase one of America's most innovative nuclear energy reactor companies, Westinghouse. Big name for us, right? We've known Westinghouse for almost a century now. But they wanted to help the Chinese through this company, CEFC, China Energy, to buy Westinghouse through cutouts. It may not have been, it might have been disguised in some way, according to the documents. But the goal was, if they could do that, then this incredible AP1000 nuclear reactor technology would be in China's control, and China would have, quote unquote, control of the nuclear energy market worldwide. Think about that for a second. Let that sink in. Hunter Biden and his business partners were talking about the goal of this project, helping CEFC China to buy Westinghouse through cutouts, would give them this nuclear technology that would allow China, America's geopolitical adversary, to control, corner, monopolize, all words that show up in some form or another in the documents, the global nuclear energy market. In other words, China would be in a better position than the United States, even though it was a United States company that developed this groundbreaking reactor. This reactor, the AP1000, was the envy of the world. Shorter, smarter, smaller footprint, higher energy output, safer, made nuclear energy more portable. And here we are watching now in these documents, the son of a sitting vice president trying to transfer that somehow so that China had the advantage on something that America had done. And we're going to talk in the second part of the show with Mike Howell. He is the former congressional investigator and the head of the Heritage Foundation's oversight project. His team has done some work on this Westinghouse and done a good job as well, and on CEFC China. But just let that absorb one more time. Hunter Biden was trying to help a Ukrainian oligarch indicted by his father get unindicted for $5 million. He was trying to help a Ukrainian gas company deemed corrupt by the United States State Department, by his father's thing, to shed that corruption claim for $1 million a year is what he got paid for that. Hunter Biden was trying to help a Russian oligarch invest in the United States real estate market along with his friends and buddies. Hunter Biden was trying to help a Romanian oligarch who was facing corruption charges in his own company escape that problem. Hunter Biden was trying to help a Kazakhstan businessman try to gain some access to U.S. government officials. And now we know that Hunter Biden, as we reported last year, was trying to help a Chinese energy company tied to the communist government buy natural gas resources from beneath our feet in America. Take our natural gas resources, send them over to China to be burned, and as well as our fracking technology. And now, today, in light of this extraordinary moment, we now know that Hunter Biden was trying to help China, in the form of CEFC China, purchase beneath our noses the one of our premier nuclear energy reactor companies and put it in Chinese control so that China could control the global energy markets. For a buck, it didn't seem to matter that adversaries and untoward, or people deemed untoward by the United States, could pay Hunter Biden to get what they wanted. Now, perhaps history will be blessed that Hunter Biden wasn't that skilled at this. And so, though he got a lot of money, he didn't deliver a lot of the goods of what these people wanted. But I want to step back, because I'm going to give you early, before we go to commercial break here, a story we're going to break tonight on the Just the News website. A few months before Hunter Biden begins working on this project with his business partners, a few months before that, we discovered something in the United States government. We discovered in May of 2014, so about 16, 17 months before Hunter Biden got involved with CFC China, that China's military was hacking into Westinghouse, into their company, as well as U.S. Steel, to try to steal volumes of trade secrets and intellectual property. It was such a bad hack, so egregious to the United States conscience and to its such a threat to its intellectual property, that the Obama-Biden Justice Department charged Chinese hackers and their military with an official crime, a crime of cyber espionage. That happened. So what do we know now? And that, by the way, Eric Holder, the Democratic Attorney General, called this a case of economic espionage. They knew, the Obama-Biden administration knew, that China was trying to hack into Westinghouse to get its reactor technology unlawfully, illicitly. They get caught. They get indicted. So what do they do? Think about this. What do they do after that? They go the other route. They go through elite capture. Let's get some money to Hunter Biden and his friends, and let's lure them in, and let's see if we can secretly buy the company through cutouts and do it in a more legitimate way that won't get us indicted. And Hunter Biden is in that continuum. In fact, when you read the story that's on our site and getting lots of attention today, you'll discover that Hunter Biden was being portrayed as the head of this effort. The Chinese wanted Hunter Biden to be in charge of it. They wanted Hunter Biden's name to be associated with this, according to Rob Walker. And so he's at the head of it. Hunter Biden is the lead on this. You heard not too long ago, a couple of weeks ago, from Peter Schweizer about China's role in using elite capture, using money to buy elites to get them to do their bidding in Western world, that was one of the leading edges of what he exposed in the new book, Blood Money, and his earlier book, Red Scare. Just think about that now. It just has to sink in a little bit. Hunter Biden's at the head of a machine that's trying to take something uniquely American and innovative and then find a way to get it to China so that China would have a strategic advantage in the geopolitical battle over energy, nuclear energy particularly, over the United States, over the Western world, over our allies. That is what we're seeing. And this occurs after the Obama-Biden administration is aware that China was trying to hack their way into this technology. It would not be anyone in our country with a common sense would say, this is not what we do in America. It's not what we expect of our political families, our political dynasties. But by the way, it is what Democrats did for most of the 2010 era. Remember my book, Fallout, with Seamus Bruner. I chronicled an earlier effort to help another adversary of the United States gained a leg up, maybe a monopolistic position in the global uranium market. Remember that? Hillary Clinton, Uranium One? That's right. While she was quarterbacking the reset of Russian relations, her husband and her were making $500,000 speech fees and big donations to their Clinton Family Foundation from Russian interests who were about to get billions of dollars of new uranium assets, both Uranium One, a company in Canada that controlled a lot of untapped uranium ore in the United States, and then billions of dollars of contracts under the A123 program that Obama carried out so that American utilities were dependent on Russian uranium. Not American uranium, Russian uranium. We put ourselves at the mercy for some of our nuclear power at Russia. That occurred, and the Clintons and others got rich off of that. Then Russia invades Ukraine the first time, and so Russia loses its shine, even though the money was good. And then here we are in 2013, 14, and 15, Hunter Biden starts pivoting to China. Two political dynasties, both willing to take money and try to facilitate policies that would put America at a disadvantage in the nuclear energy marketplace. I don't know what to say to that. I think you know what to say to it because you're pretty smart listeners and readers and consumers of what we do. I really think that that's so important to digest. This story is a significant, significant story. We've gone through all the different people, entities that Hunter Biden was trying to make a buck on. There's a pattern. They often are adversarial to the United States or from adversarial countries. They're often people that had significant legal or reputational problems. Something to really think about. All right. We're going to take a quick commercial break. When we come back in a second, we're going to get Fred Flights, the former chief of staff to the National Security Council. But before we do, I want to shout out my good friends at Alliance Defending Freedom. They often get attacked by the mainstream media and the left, but they've been fighting for free speech and religious freedom in this country for more than three decades. And they not only fight, they have brought some of the most landmark lawsuits that have cemented and protected freedom and liberty in this country. And they're in the middle of fighting two more cases that are both before the United Supreme Court. I've been telling you about this, but I don't want to lose track of this. This is an important set of litigation that is winding through the country. One of the lawsuits is against the FDA for endangering the health and safety of women and girls. The second is in trying to help the state of Idaho defend its law, its pro-life law, its restrictions on abortion. They're big cases. They're both going to be decided this year. They cost a lot of money. They're likely to create decades, if not centuries, of precedent in our court. If you feel like you'd like to contribute to this, if you want to feel like you can make a difference, you can join ADF. You can just give, you know, whatever you can afford to give, $5, $10, $25, $100, whatever it is. Go to joinadf.org/John, John for my last name, adf.org/John and give whatever you feel like you can afford to give. We'd like to raise them $5,000 by the end of March. And if you can do that, you'll be part of the history of fighting for religious and speech freedom in this country. It's very important. All right, one more time. Join adf.org/John if you want to make a difference. We'll be right back after these messages with the one, the only, Fred Fleitz, my good friend. By the way, he was with Hungarian Prime Minister and President Trump last week. We'll probably start off talking about that right after these messages. Folks, if you owe back taxes, fair warning, you're not going to like this. The IRS is mailing millions of pay-up letters. Millions, I say. Then it's up to the 20,000 new IRS enforcement agents to find you. Why the IRS targets you and not millionaires? Well, because millionaires have tax lawyers. You don't. You'll pay up. Plus interest and penalties. You need Tax Network USA, and you need them now. Tax Network USA has brilliant war room strategies to solve your IRS problems quickly and in your favor. Like a preferred direct line to the IRS, they know which agents to deal with and who to avoid. It's not all bad news for you because Tax Network USA learned of a special limited time IRS offer. They're willing to waive $1 billion in penalties if you qualify. So schedule your free confidential consultation to see if you qualify for this limited time IRS penalty canceling offer. To do so, call 1-800-245-6000. That's 1-800-245-6000 or visit tnusa.com/justnews. That's tnusa.com/justnews.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about all from the comfort of your home isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
All right, folks, welcome back from the commercial break. I'm really excited to have this next guest on. If you were paying attention to our coverage last week when President Trump met with the Hungarian Prime Minister Orban, you saw some photos that came out of that. One of the people sitting right in the middle of the table is one of our familiar guests here, one of the greatest national security experts I've been able to deal with in my career. Fred Fleitz is joining us, and he was at that table. And what an amazing moment. Fred, great to have you back on the show.
Hey, John, good to be here.
That was such an extraordinary moment. In fact, you could tell it got under the Biden administration's skin. They were a little upset about the attention and the dialogue, but a really incredible moment. A foreign leader comes to meet with a former president who's now the nominee to become potentially the next president. A very important moment. What struck you most sitting at the table and watching these two world leaders interact?
Well, let's state up front that this foreign leader did not ask to meet with the Biden administration, and the Biden administration didn't want to meet with him. And he's actually endorsed President Trump, which foreign leaders are not supposed to do. It was an incredible honor when President Trump invited me to be part of that meeting. And I saw two leaders who have a lot in common. They've both been ostracized by the global elite, by the mainstream press, by the foreign policy establishment. They've said things you're not supposed to say. They've done things you're not supposed to do, especially on immigration. I can't discuss the specifics of this meeting because it's off the record. But I mean, I will tell you things that are generally known. Prime Minister Orban is very proud of his positions on immigration. You probably know that the European Union approach to immigration is not to stop it, but to spread around illegal immigrants to every country. Every country has a share of illegal immigrants they're supposed to take. But Hungary alone has refused to take its share. And Orban's very proud of this. He said, this is why our country is not breaking down like France and Sweden and Germany. And when illegal immigrants come into Hungary, they're kicked out. If they want to come in, they have to go to an embassy outside of Hungary and request permission to immigrate to Hungary. Now, the European Union is furious with Orban over this, and they're actually fining him. And he said, fine, I'm not going to change this position. This is in the interest of the Hungarian people. And you could see that President Trump was in agreement.
Yeah, no, there's no doubt. There's been another dynamic, and there was a lot of demagoguery for a long time, and there's this fake narrative that was out there that, oh, Donald Trump was trying to destroy NATO. And the answer is, when you talk to NATO officers on the front lines, when you talk to Europeans who really know, NATO came out of the Trump administration stronger because he demanded that people pay their fair share, and he got it better funded. After a lot of demagoguery, there seems to be a moment the last few months. It started with the outgoing Dutch prime minister, but now a lot of people, Viktor Orban himself said it, are realizing that, hey, this demagoguery about NATO is not true. Donald Trump's not anti-NATO. He actually made it better by getting countries who are in arrears to pay up. Why that dynamic now? Is there a realization in Europe maybe that they got to stop criticizing Trump because he could be the guy again?
Well, check out my article on American Greatness on March 8th. It is time for Europe to stop the fear-mongering about a second Trump presidency. And I talk about crazy things that British and French newspapers have been saying about Trump. But I also noted that two former British prime ministers have said that, frankly, the world was better off with Trump. And one of them said, and this was... Liz Truss, that there's little doubt the world felt safer and calmer and more stable when Trump was in office. Truss also said the United States under Biden has projected weakness. Now, I think every European leader knows this, but they're so obsessed with their Trump hatred and pushing far left globalist policies that they refuse to admit it, just like the press in this country won't admit it. But it's interesting that these two former British prime ministers, who are part of a globalist elite, even though they're so-called conservatives, they're part of the globalist elite, they have broken with the pact.
It's just remarkable. And it is. That whole crowd of elitists in Europe and their lovers in Washington, they've gotten themselves into an echo chamber. And I don't think they realize how disconnected they look from reality now. And I think a lot of that's going to come out in this election. I think America's going to say, God, this foreign policy chorus that's been singing this song, it didn't work the last 4 years. And there's going to be a repudiation, I think, of a lot of the concepts that have driven not only Biden foreign policy, but all the liberal leaders in Europe as well. There was a pretty remarkable moment today. And I know the normal rule in American politics is we speak with one voice in foreign policy. We can disagree all we want, but we speak with one voice when it comes to foreign policy. The Senate leader, Chuck Schumer, injected himself into Israeli politics, calling for Israel to have an election to overthrow Benjamin Netanyahu at a moment when Benjamin Netanyahu is in a war he didn't choose, right? Hamas chose this war, not Benjamin Netanyahu. How extraordinary was it, and what is going on the left that the Senate leader has to take that sort of shot at one of our closest allies?
I think that was outrageous, but I want to talk about something else. I want to talk about the worldwide threat hearing this week, the unclassified hearing before the Senate Intelligence Committee. And during this hearing, intelligence officials said that Netanyahu is a bad leader and he's likely going to be overthrown. Now, this hearing is about threats to the United States. So why was Israel in this hearing at all? But second of all, we know that this testimony, this report, doesn't come out without the approval of the White House. So the White House was using the intelligence community as a proxy to push criticism, very fierce criticism, about one of America's closest allies. It was reprehensible. Talk about politicization of intelligence. This is just at a new level.
It is stunning. It really is stunning. And I think the fallout will be that it will actually drive Israelis closer to protect Netanyahu short term because they don't like foreign people meddling in their election. It seems to me that nothing the United States is going to say under Joe Biden is going to stop Benjamin Netanyahu from finishing the job of eradicating Hamas. Does he go and get that job done and then worry about the political fallout later?
Look, Netanyahu is going to do what's best for the Israeli people. He's not going to change his policies because Biden's hurting in the polls because his radical left doesn't like the war. And his radical left has these far-left Palestinian demonstrators yelling Genocide Joe. Netanyahu doesn't care. He cares about the security of his country. But, you know, he's a classy guy. He doesn't criticize Biden publicly like Biden criticizes him. He's trying to keep the best relations possible. He knows the American people are with Israel. But it must be frustrating if you're prime minister of Israel and the president of the United States is doing everything possible to undermine his efforts to protect the Israeli people and to throw him out of power.
Yeah, it's pretty remarkable. It really is. I want to turn to one other thing, because in the threat assessment and, of course, in just common sense America, we know that China is the largest geopolitical threat that America faces long term, economically, militarily. We had a story this morning that is really about the result of about 5 months of work. And that is that Hunter Biden and his business partners in 2016, which means Joe Biden is still the sitting vice president, by the way, sitting vice president with China Policy Authority, because Barack Obama gave a lot of that portfolio to him. And his son is out there with his business partners trying to facilitate a sale. And now they talk about it being masked, meaning that they were going to hide it through cutouts. But they want to get America's premier nuclear reactor maker, Westinghouse, into Chinese hands in a company called CEFC China. That's a company we know Hunter Biden said had an official that he thought was the freaking spy chief of China, that Joe Biden's brother, James, said the CEO of, Chairman Yi, the head of it, was close friends with President Xi, the president of China. So they know it's tied very closely to communist China's government. And they're trying to help this company buy the premier nuclear energy reactor company, which, by the way, had just made this thing called the AP1000, which was the envy of the world, the greatest nuclear and smallest nuclear reactor ever made. And there is the sitting vice president's son trying to help China obtain that, and in obscurity even. They even talk about how they're going to create layers of transactions so it's not clear China's buying it. And their plan for China boasts that if you do this, if we pull this off for you, you will control and dominate and monopolize the nuclear energy market in the world for years to come. That's the story that's in documents. There's no source material. It's all documents obtained by Congress. How shocking would it be that a son of a vice president would be in that level of engagement with one of our geopolitical enemies?
I think it's shocking, but it's not surprising, because we know that Hunter was already involved in efforts to sell energy assets, other energy assets, oil and gas to the Chinese. It seems that the Biden family was prepared to sell anything that wasn't nailed down to advance themselves, to make money. I don't think this was a conspiracy to help the Chinese Communist Party. I think this was pure greed by the Biden family. I think Joe Biden knew about it. And I know it sounds appalling, but I just think it's par for the course.
Yeah. And you were in the intelligence community a long time. The chance that the CIA and our intelligence agencies weren't aware of what Hunter Biden was doing, who he was dealing with. They had a FISA warrant on Patrick Ho, the guy that was actually one of his main partners on this. Any chance that Joe Biden didn't get some form of defensive briefing about some of these contacts, the Ukraine, the Russian, the Chinese contacts?
I think it's likely he got defensive briefings, yes. And I think he probably received information in the presidential daily brief when he was vice president that had profiles of some of these characters and analyses of things that they were up to. But it didn't seem to stop him. I think, well, I mean, what did we hear during the HER briefing this week concerning the classified documents in Biden's house? It was about ego and money.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, he called it just exactly what it was. That's exactly right. Are you surprised the way HER came down in the ultimate conclusion about Joe Biden? It seemed to me that this was a knowing and willful effort and didn't know the law had an exception for old, forgetful people.
I think HER is an ethical man. He was trying to make the best of a bad situation. And given the way Biden behaved in the hearing, I mean, he just made a judgment. There's no way to convict this guy because he's acting so senile. Now, was Biden acting more senile than he really is? I sort of wonder about that. But, I mean, realistically, this was probably the best outcome. And he wrote something down the American people needed to hear. I know the Democrats don't want to believe it, but look, I'm sorry. I think when Biden gave his State of the Union address, he was probably drugged up because he's not the same Biden I saw this week.
That's right. He was two different people a few hours apart. He really was.
So I'm wondering, like, what's going on there? How can he be alert and able to yell at the American people for a solid hour and read his teleprompter, and a few days later, he's completely incoherent? There's something going on here.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I think most of our allies whisper that. I've talked to a lot of foreign leaders in the last 6 months that are like, there's something going on with Joe Biden. He's not all there. We can't say that, but he's not all there. One last thing, going back to the China threat and specifically what Hunter Biden was doing. All right, so we know Patrick Ho was under a FISA warrant, so the government knew this guy was up to something. But about 18 months before Hunter Biden engages on this, let's get the nuclear reactor deal done for China, there is a hacking incident. In fact, the U.S. Justice Department, Barack Obama, Justice Department, Eric Holder, personally announced it because it was such a big deal. They charged the Chinese military with trying to hack Westinghouse to get the design for this nuclear reactor. So, all right, China goes through the hacking route. They get caught. And then it seems like they move to a second strategy, which is elite capture. Let's get Hunter Biden to get it through a more legitimate way. Pretty extraordinary that those two things happen 18 months apart, but probably not an accident from China's perspective, right?
Well, I mean, some people would say that there was a conspiracy here, that the Biden administration was basically collaborating with the Chinese. But I think the Chinese were using the Biden family as useful idiots, people who will frankly do anything for money. And if you stroke their egos, you offer them expensive cars. And what did they give, $10 billion to the Biden family? I still want to know what that money was for. You could get anything you want.
Yeah, and it's not clear that they ever delivered anything. I mean, all these deals, whatever they promised, they weren't able to deliver at any point. Last week, I wrote a story that not 8 months after Dmitry Firtash was indicted by the Obama-Biden Justice Department for a corruption scheme. Now, the case is controversial. Some people think it isn't a very good case. But Dad's administration indicts the guy. Hunter Biden's on the other side saying, hey, for $5 million, I might be able to make that indictment go away. The money changes hands. It's not in doubt because it's in testimony. It's in documents. Dmitry Firtash, his own people said it happened. But he couldn't deliver on that, but he still gets money. It doesn't seem like it mattered whether Hunter Biden delivered anything to these bad guys, but it seems like they were targeting bad guys, right? Isn't that part of the modus operandi?
I think so. And it's just, I think if we looked at this, if the name Biden wasn't attached to it, there would be indictments, there'd be jail time, they'd be spending huge amounts of money, legal fees to keep themselves out of jail. But when Bidens or Clintons are involved, there's a different set of rules, and they don't get prosecuted, and they get rich, and the rest of us can just watch.
And it's all we get to do, watch in frustration and sometimes embarrassment, I think, too. I think some people look at it and say, this is not America. We don't do it this way. It's pretty remarkable. Well, Fred, always, it's such an honor to have you on. The columns you've been writing, I keep such a close eye on. I think you're capturing the moment that American history, as it's unfolding, particularly on the world stage. There is so much the world is looking for American leadership on, and it's always great to have your wisdom on this show.
Great to be here. Thanks, John.
Thank you, sir. All right, folks, we're going to take a quick commercial break. In a second, we're going to turn to Mike Howell, who's one of the great players in the investigative space. He runs the Heritage Foundation's Oversight Project. He is absolutely one of the great muckrakers and truth tellers in America. Now, before we do that, though, I want to give a shout out to my good friends at the Tax Network, because we're heading into that final stretch of the tax season. Yes, April 15th is around the corner. Heck, this weekend's going to be St. Patrick's Day. So you're less than a month from owing your taxes, having to file your taxes, whatever it is that you're, whatever position you're in. Well, Tax Network USA has a brilliant war room strategy to solve any IRS problems you might have encountered. Maybe you forgot to make some payments. Maybe you fell behind on some payments. And now the IRS agents are knocking at your door saying, hey, you got to pay up, buddy. Time to pay up. Well, one of the great things that the Tax Network has done is they've created a war room strategy. And they got a direct line to the IRS. They know which agents to deal with and who to avoid. It's not all bad news for you, because Tax Network USA learned of a special limited time IRS offer. The IRS is temporarily willing to waive at least $1 billion in penalties for people who earn arrears on their taxes. If you qualify, you're going to save some money. You're going to save some aggravation and some heartburn. So schedule your free confidential consultation to see if you've qualified for this limited time IRS penalty canceling offer. How do you do this? Well, one way is to call 1-800-245-6000. That's 1-800-245-6000. If you prefer to use a website instead to get the process started, it's a very easy process to do. Visit the website TNUSA, that stands for Tax Network, TNUSA.com/justnews. One more time, TNUSA.com/justnews. All right, you're thinking about your taxes. Take some of the nightmare out of it, particularly if you're in a situation where you think you might get penalized by the IRS. My friends at Tax Network USA, they've got this war room strategy. They got the numbers. They got the experience. They can get you the best possible deal out there because they have that experience. One more time, call 1-800-245-6000, 1-800-245-6000, or visit TNUSA.com/justnews. All right, Mike Howell, right after this message.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
All right, folks, welcome back from the commercial break. I want to stay on the subject we opened the podcast with today, this story of Hunter Biden and his business partners. While Joe Biden is still sitting in the White House as Barack Obama's vice president, making a deal with a Chinese energy company that they believe is tied to the effing spy chief of China, to a man, Jim Biden said they knew was directly connected with President Xi of China. So they knew they were dealing with the very top of China. And here they are trying to help this company buy off one of America's crown jewels of its nuclear energy industry, the Westinghouse electric company, which at the time had the envy of the world, the AP1000 reactor, the new small footprint, high output nuclear reactor that is revolutionizing the nuclear industry. And Hunter Biden was glad with his business partners to get that in China's hands and to do it in a way that it would not be obviously apparent. And they stated their goal in their own documents was to ensure that China would have control of the global nuclear market. Now, one person who was way ahead of me on this and continues to work great stuff is Mike Howell, the head of the Oversight Project at Heritage Foundation. He's been on this for a long time, piecing it together. I thought I'd bring in the ultimate subject expert to bring us through this. Mike, good to have you back on. Congratulations on all the work you're doing every day at Oversight.
Hey, I really appreciate that. We're just trying to keep up with you over there.
You're doing pretty darn good. I check in every morning. Like, what has Mike got now? This is great. It is amazing what we've done. But I think this story, I think there's a couple of stories in the last week that are just so audacious. And in many ways, Hunter Biden's business partners wrote the unspoken down on paper in a way that now they're going to have to live with it. But this one's pretty amazing. They want to take the best nuclear energy reactor company in America, send it to our greatest geopolitical foe, with knowing that the goal is to help China be the global dominant marketplace for nuclear energy for, you know, 10, 20, 30 years. Can you imagine any other son of a president or vice president having that audacity?
Absolutely not. I think this goes to what Representative Andy Biggs was saying the other day, that basically they're operating without honor or any patriotic kind of duty to the country in some of these deals. And I think the plan to help the Chinese acquire Westinghouse is the best illustration of that, or, you know, maybe the worst. I don't know why I'm using the term the best.
Yeah, it's the most compelling, and it is the worst.
So what we have here is basically, you know, Westinghouse, you hit this, nuclear secrets, right? The nuclear reactors. And what is our kind of chief point of strategic advantage over the Chinese? It's the nuclear subfleet, and that technology is critical for the U.S. And this is what Hunter was trying to help the Chinese get access to.
Yeah, this is the AP. When the AP 1000 came out, and you can see, go back in time and we looked at these documents. I mean, everybody in the world was envious of what Westinghouse had created. It had created the smallest, most powerful reactor, and it really changes nuclear energy from a big footprint, you know, an expensive footprint, to something shorter, more practical, more efficient. And of course, China wanted its hands on it, and there was probably a strong likelihood, as the partners of Hunter Biden wrote in the plan, that Americans would be a little uptight if we tried to pull this off. Tell us a little bit about the mindset that you see in these documents, because you got James Gilyard. He's a foreigner that's working with Hunter Biden. Then you've got Rob Walker, a family insider, right? And then you got Jim Biden, and who knows, because he tells the FBI this, that CEFC Energy and its chairman, Chairman Yi, are directly tied to the president of China, the communist president of China. What are these guys thinking when they're trying to pull this off? Is this just purely for money?
You know, I would like to think it's purely for money, and maybe that's what Hunter and his American counterparts were in it for. But if you look at the language in the deal proposal, it is about geopolitics. I got a couple quotes right here in front of me. Here's what the proposal says. China will own intellectual property rights. Not you know, some business entity, but China. They're talking about the country. Next quote. Westinghouse has significant lobbying power in the U.S. Congress, which will provide insurance to China. Okay, next quote. Last one I got here. This structure could potentially give China monopoly advantage. Quote. And so they're not talking about just necessarily financial terms. They understand that people they're trying to please are not in this just to make money, but for geopolitical and military strategic interests. And that's what Hunter was trying to deliver for the Chinese while his dad was vice president. And one last point here. How do we know the Chinese were so interested in this technology besides the obvious implications? In 2014, the DOJ indicted Chinese military hackers for poking around Westinghouse. And, you know, a tactic, you know, it's like hack and look around. And if it's worth it, try to go out and buy it.
That's right. Yep. That's exactly how they do it. They use their hackers to get enough information to evaluate it. And then they go out and find their cash mercenaries to go and get them the technology through legitimate means. It goes all the way back to the 1990s and the effort to spy on our nuclear weapons, same modus operandi. There is a lot in this, moment that was blinking red about China, not just the fact that their hackers were already looking at it, but this is shortly after there's the greatest purge of U.S. spies in China. Someone compromised our spies in China. We had a large loss of human. There's the first efforts to start building up the South Pacific Islands. There is a growing crackdown on Hong Kong and freedom and speech. And there is the first real saber rattling in a long time in China on Taiwan. So the moment where Hunter Biden is helping Taiwan, excuse me, helping Beijing, there is an enormous amount of geopolitical tension that China is asserting. It's China being the aggressor. Is there any chance that our CIA and our intelligence agencies, the FBI, weren't watching this and saying, hey, Mr. Vice President, hey, Hunter Biden, be careful. You're dealing with bad guys.
I think that's the real question. I don't think there is a chance that this was not on the CIA's radar. If you look at the cast of characters involved here, you have Hunter and Giller on the American side, but then also you have the known kind of, as referenced by Hunter himself, the spy chief of China, Patrick Ho, who's in on this, along with, you know, the chairman and Zhang. So this cast of characters in and of themselves suspicious in dealing with nuclear you know, reactors in Westinghouse, that is clearly within the CIA's remit. So was it on the CIA's radar? Absolutely. The question is, did Biden get a defensive briefing about it? In any normal course of operations, the answer to that is absolutely yes. And I think that probably and likely happened. And so then the question becomes, what did Joe Biden do about it? Did he continue to allow the family business to profit from playing in the space, or did he shut it down? And I think the answer obviously is, he continued to allow it to operate because we see these types of business dealings continue. But the real story here, aside from the, you know, obvious influence peddling and acting against U.S. national interests, is what the FBI, CIA, our intelligence community, and others failed to do during this critical time period and, frankly, are failing to do today. It's that they sat on these known instances of major threats because of politics. And then you compare that to how they treated President Trump, where anything was run to all ends of the earth and leaked to the media to spin up narratives that persist to this day when we're still dealing with Russia collusion narratives. And it's just two different standards of justice, and it doesn't help the American people. We're talking about nuclear reactors. We're talking about our strategic interest against the Chinese that the president, the now president's son, was willing to trade away for money. And I think the vice president then, Joe Biden, knew about it and did nothing about it.
Yeah, I fear that that is going to be the narrative that we're going to learn when we get to the bottom of this very ugly barrel. Is it incumbent upon the House Judiciary Committee, the House Oversight Committee, the House Intelligence Committee to get copies of any defensive briefings that Biden's got?
I think that's absolutely, you know, their role to play right now. And I'm very glad that Chairman Comer and his team are taking a harder look right now at the Chinese connections.
Big news today.
Big news. It's a major shift in escalation in the investigation. I hope that Chairman Comer gets more support from his colleagues, particularly in the intelligence community. We have not seen much come out of that committee in a time where I think the intelligence committee needs more oversight and accountability than ever before. And so I hope they step up to the plate and support Chairman Comer, who's really been leading this charge for Capitol Hill.
You know, it's amazing. Just before the prior Republican chairman left the House Intelligence Committee, Devin Nunes, they did a lot of great research on the threats that China was posing, particularly through economic espionage. And they left this incredible roadmap for the House Intelligence Committee. But it doesn't seem like Chairman Turner and his team have really followed the thread on that. And yet, you know, you talk to any person on the street, they say China's our biggest concern. Everyday Americans know it's there, but it doesn't seem like the House Intelligence Committee has been acting that way. What do you think is going on there?
I don't call the House Intelligence Committee. I call the House Intelligence Caucus. They basically act traditionally a committee that just supports. Devin Nunes, the legendary Devin Nunes, was an exception to that role. He did too good of a job there, and that's probably why it's back under control of the IC's remit. I don't know. They've frankly been asleep at the wheel for a long time, and today's no exception.
Yeah, I think that's I think a lot of people look at that. It was so differently run when Devin Nunes was in charge. They did so much aggressive oversight, and they left a map. They left a roadmap for where China was supposed to go. Going back to the hack, because a lot of people forget this, but it was 2014. I think it was both Westinghouse and U.S. Steel, which, of course, they also Chinese envied our steel companies because we have a better processing of steel than they do. They charged the Chinese military doing this. Is it an accident that China then tries to go to a less hostile method of getting this capability, i.e. getting a political name like Hunter Biden to maybe help them get what they wanted more legitimately?
I mean, that's the modus operandi, right? This is reflected in the proposal that Hunter's team wrote. It's that they're talking about how going through them could help in Washington. It's basically the cutout. This is how influence peddling works. You don't go from have someone from the CCP call up Westinghouse. You go to the cutout that's connected politically and run by Hunter Biden and connected to Joe Biden. That's the play here. And that's what influence peddling and Chairman Comer's, legislative outcomes, I think, seek to address. And this isn't just in the highest levels of, you know, nuclear reactors in this country. It's happening at industries across all levels and scales. I mean, we see it in the agriculture industry. You're seeing it right now play out with this TikTok debate. It's everywhere. And one more point, actually, that just comes to mind about why this should have been directly on the intelligence community's radar is Hunter's group in the CEFC with Patrick Ho, the spy chief of China, his business partner. It's not just Westinghouse they're approaching. Even the New York Times admitted what I'm about to say. They went out and tried to get all of these former high-level IC officials, you know, whether it was Louis Free was in the mix, the former FBI director who, guess what, donated $100K to the Bidens. How about that? And you know, former National Security Agency officials, CIA officials. We put out a thread the other day documenting these all. But this is a blatant in-your-face attempt. And so there's no excuse that this wasn't given in a defensive briefing to Joe, and there's no excuse for him not doing anything about it.
Yeah, no, there is. And it's now incumbent on Republicans to get to the bottom of this, because if Joe Biden turned a blind eye to a threat to national security while he was vice president solely for his son to make more money or his brother to make more money, it really makes a stronger case for impeachment, I think, for most everyday Americans. It seems like such an important part of the story that we're missing right now. There is a bigger picture now, and I think every day as we develop new stories and you do your great work and Comer and Jordan drop their bombs, it's pretty clear that Hunter Biden was targeting the worst of the worst, right? They were looking for people that were in our geopolitical adversaries. They were looking for people who had legal trouble. The story I did last week, I think a lot of people said, my God, that's audacious. But Joe Biden's and Barack Obama's Justice Department indicts a Ukrainian oligarch named Dmitry Firtash. And not 6 months later, Hunter Biden's on the other side of the deal saying, hey, I can maybe get you unindicted if you pay me $5 million. It seems like this influence peddling machine wasn't just trying to peddle influence and get money, but it seems like they were targeting people that had unsavory reputations, Burisma, the Romanian oligarch, Dmitry Firtash, this Chinese company, people who had legal problems and people that whose foreign policy issues fell directly under his dad. Was it that crass that they were targeting that type of client base?
Absolutely. And you can see the business model there, basically distressed assets. The one thing they need is reputational rehabilitation and entry into the right corners. And that's what Joe Biden and Hunter Biden were able to provide, basically laundering them through connected entities with longstanding relationships to the veneer of the vice presidency and this major political family. And that's why influence peddling at this grade and level is so much more destructive than your standard issue lobbying. I know a lot of House Democrats will say, well, he was just, you know, doing a lot. We have lobbyists everywhere. We have people who do this type of work all across D.C. No, he had something that other people did not have. And that's the prestige and access and influence of the highest office in the world. And that's what he was selling at the end of the day, and why they were so bold in going after the most distressed and unsavory and threatening clients to the United States.
It's pretty darn amazing when I look at it. And it was so audacious. And the idea that this was a secret, it can't be. The U.S. intelligence community, our allies, they must have all saw this in real time saying, what the heck is going on? With this American political leader, why is this family selling us out? And I think that's another part we're going to see start to fill in. I'm getting a sense now that other foreign countries were starting to gulp and raise some concerns privately. You very early on at the Oversight Project at Heritage Foundation really zeroed in on Patrick Ho. I think that is so wise because of all the characters, and there's a lot of indicted characters that were Hunter Biden's buddies, right? Dmitry Firtash and Patrick Ho and all the guys, including Devin Archer, that get it whacked in the tribal scheme. But Patrick Ho would have been under a FISA surveillance for a large part of the time he was engaged with Hunter Biden. Tell us why early on that you put a big circle around Patrick Ho and why he continues to be a very important figure in this.
Right. So Patrick Ho is who Hunter referred to as the bleeping spy chief of China. And so if that doesn't make your alarm bells go off, I don't know what does. And obviously he's a central player in the group we just talked about, CEFC. This is a guy who was arrested and put away for other illegal activity in Africa. And, you know, Hunter acted as his quote-unquote lawyer at a time when he was, you know, in the throes of addiction. Hunter has no criminal, experience as an attorney, and this came up in his plea deal. And so you just see money going back and forth between these two individuals in all the shadiest ways. And I think it's probably one of the firmest nexuses to the CCP. I'd go as far to say Ho was basically his CCP handler to an extent, along with the chairman and others. And this is somebody who was under FISA surveillance. And in the court records, guess whose name was most likely redacted? Hunter Biden's. And so you can start to see the elements of the Department of Justice and others, you know, protecting Hunter and hiding that name. And so I think this captures the larger story here, which is the DOJ, the IC, and others, all, of course, subject to political control of the president and vice president, but having a different set of rules and trying to hide and hope the conduct goes away to protect the big guy. It wasn't just Hunter and his business partners protecting the big guys. It was our three-letter agencies, the ones we glamorize and make Netflix series about and Hollywood movies about. No, they were engaged in this cover-up as well. And that's a hard conversation to have about the state of weaponization in our own government.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. Early on, you and, of course, the great Peter Schweitzer also really zeroed in on a China strategy called elite capture. And it seems like just for a few bucks, you could capture just about any Democrat elite in America. There's so many examples now of people that go to think tanks and all of a sudden they're being paid by our adversaries. This was built into the Chinese influence policy, right? Let's see who among Democratic elites could be lured away with money.
That's absolutely right. It's way more sophisticated of a strategy than I think what people expect. You see the standard being set in media of, I need to see Joe Biden getting an envelope of cash or direct deposit from China into his bank account. That's not necessarily how these sophisticated intelligence operations work. Elite capture is where basically through access or jobs or other things, get people who are closely related to people in power or who are in power and reward them and basically soften the impulse to ever give them a hard look. This happens in all sorts of cultural contexts as well.
Yeah. Yeah, no, absolutely. There's another piece of this that you've been all over. And of course, we filed the lawsuit to one of the lawsuits to try to leverage these. But at the time these things are going on and his family is involved with people like Russian oligarchs and Ukrainian oligarchs and indicted oligarchs and the Chinese, Joe Biden is acting peculiarly as a vice president. He's got a burner phone, or certainly a phone that's off the books. He's got all the three pseudonym emails that we're suing to try to get, and we got a little bit from the National Archives, but it's coming out like a trickle. Those are actions that are unusual for a government official whose family's probably being targeted by the CCP in China and elsewhere. A lot of that gets glossed over, but that's a very important thing. Joe Biden himself was acting unusual, right?
Oh, very much so. And you're going to get me going here, because this is what I'm most upset about Special Counsel Hur.
Oh, my gosh. That's a big miss, right?
The House has sent some letters and subpoenas. We have our lawsuits. We know about the pseudonyms. We know about the burner phones. They're going to hold those records till the day they die in federal court and throw up. But the guy who had the chance to actually get them was none other than Special Counsel Hur. Okay. And he was supposed to be looking at Biden's handling of our nation's top secrets. And from the report, there is zero indication that he even ventured to look at this complex web of evasive devices, pseudonym emails, alias emails. I mean, Joe Biden's got a million nicknames. It's, you know, he's like a rapper that you just make up different names every little time. I mean, JR Beware and, you know, Renegade. He goes by something different every day. And her, who had all the powers of the federal government and some degree of independence, allegedly, isn't even curious about that network of evasive devices. And he simply only looks, here's where the classified documents physically were. And he doesn't look at how they were used in this larger context. That was the missed shot. I think the fix was in, to be honest with you. I think that one line about Biden's memory was in there to make everyone look away and applaud. I think her did a worse job than James Comey, and I'm no fan of James Comey.
Yeah, that, you're right. Yeah, you put something out this morning that was that Comey actually did a more thorough investigation of Hillary Clinton, and I think that that's true. It is remarkable. And I think there's one other thing that when I look at Comer and Jordan right now, they need to figure out which of those classified documents Joe personally chose to keep, like the conversations with the Ukrainian prime minister in the month that he forced the firing of the Ukraine prosecutor. They got to go figure out what was in those documents and were they a valuable Hunter Biden, and is Hunter Biden's fingerprints on any of those documents? It seems to me those are two very big things they could do right now in Congress.
Oh, that's a great idea. I would love to actually see that. I think you're talking about the physical forensic fingerprints. I mean, that should have been done. That's a great idea. And it speaks to kind of the need for House investigations to evolve with the times. Enough of the paper investigations of just requesting and hoping. We need people out in the field with those great ideas. I'm glad you mentioned that. I'm going to push that.
Yeah, we are too. I think it's something important. And it's something that, it was funny, I didn't see anyone asking. I'm thinking, well, if he was sharing these documents, we know they shared them with the author, are there fingerprints on them? And no one asked that question. And I thought, well, that's unusual. It seems like we'll have to scratch at that ourselves. And that's what the great work you do every day. I got one more fun one, because I'm always enthralled by all the great work that you're doing at the Oversight Project. You are a machine. There are so many different projects going on. This is a little story that I think speaks huge volumes to the American public. You got a document under four, it looks like, from the U.S. Patent and Trade Office. You know, they're kind of not controversial. They just review our different things. But they are now apparently have a gender transition plan for their workplace. They actually, you have this whole process you can follow and at taxpayer expense to start to transition genders. Pretty shocking how far this has gone into the culture of the federal agencies right now.
It's absolutely insane. What we've uncovered here, because we sent out FOIAs basically to every single government agency, large and small, and what we've gotten back has shown us that a gigantic, sophisticated architecture is being built out agency by agency, not only to set high-level policies on transgenderism, but things to control speech, to encourage transgenderism, to set standards and all these complex processes. In the U.S. prisons, for example, there's a board. If you're a prisoner, you appeal to your warden sends you to a board of, you know, lefty psychologists, and then the taxpayers pay for your surgery, and not just the minimum surgery, but facial hair removal, et cetera. But patent and trademark is an especially absurd one, because that is the one place in the federal government that should be pretty precise with their definitions, right? That's what they do for a living, patents and trademarks. They should be good at line drawing. And here they are putting out this policy on something that the Supreme Court Justice Ketanji Brown can't even define the difference between a man and a woman. And so Americans should be incensed that instead of building sophisticated architecture to combat CCP influence, we're building it to accommodate a fringe part of the minority in this country who frankly need help more than encouragement.
It's really remarkable. You found something similar at NASA too, right? And you had, I think, one of the best tweets of the week. I always keep like five tweets. I think these are the best ones. NASA should focus on putting a man on the moon, not a man in a woman's costume. I think a lot of people say, I get that. That's good. Same, this mentality is spreading across all these agencies. That, and it's not about their core competencies anymore. It's about meeting someone's leftist agenda, it seems like.
Right. And it's really almost more sinister than that. It's not just that feel-good, do-good liberalism of whatever the current trend is. The federal government is the standard setter for the entire country's employment practices. This is how, you know, in past, you know, generations, affirmative action was tested out in the federal government. Same-sex marriage was. It's the incubator for things that are moved on, then passed on to corporate best practices, and then downstream to state and federal or local governments. And so they're not doing this just because they need to avoid a lawsuit or somebody's getting a little too, you know, outspoken at work. It's because they want the entire country to operate this way, and that's how they see it happening.
It's just in a remarkable moment we're living in history. Our generations of American history are going to be defined by the decisions we make in the next few years, and it is an amazing thing. Mike, for anyone who hasn't already discovered, I think, one of the most important voices in all of accountability and oversight, how do people find the work you do at the Oversight Project at the Great Heritage Foundation?
So check us out on X at Oversight and then the letters PR. We post all of our documents there, and we're just rapid fire trying to get as much info to the people as possible.
It is an amazing project. The transparency you're achieving every day is unparalleled. And again, even on this very important CFC story, you were right there breaking it alongside of and driving the narrative for a long time. It's great, great work and a great honor to have you on the show today.
I really appreciate that. Thank you, John.
Thanks, my friend. All right, folks, we're going to take a quick commercial break. When we come back, we're going to wrap things up for the day.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So, what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
All right, folks, that wraps up another edition of John Solomon Reports. Be sure to check Just the News out tonight before you go to bed, justthenews.com, or when you wake up in the morning. That's fine. It's Friday morning. Well, ease into your day. We're going to have that follow-up story on what we learned about Hunter Biden and the effort to buy Westinghouse for China and CFC China, the earlier hacking attempt that the United States government detected. China was trying to steal Westinghouse's intellectual property before they hired Hunter Biden and his team to try to buy it away from them. That is a really important story. Also, we've got a couple of great offers for you. One more time, if you want to take advantage of Tax Network USA's tax expertise, maybe because you're in arrears, you got a problem, maybe the IRS is knocking and threatening you with penalties, all you got to do to get a free confidential consultation is to call 1-800-245-6000, 1-800-245-6000, or visit the website, tnusa.com/justnews. The experts there will get you started. They've got a war room strategy. They know who to deal with the IRS. They know how to take advantage of that $1 billion in waivers of penalties. Maybe you qualify for that. That's pretty important. So one more time, 1-800-245-6000, or go to tnusa.com/justnews. The other one I want to remind you about, please support my friends at Alliance Defending Freedom. They are doing such important work. They've got these two giant Supreme Court cases that I mentioned to you. I've been mentioning it all month. I'm going to keep mentioning it. If you want to go help out, go to joinadf.org/John. So joinadf.org/John. That's my first name, J-O-H-N. All right. We'll be back tomorrow with another edition of John Solomon Reports. Until then, God bless you. Have a great night. Be sure to check out Just the News. We've got you covered. If you haven't downloaded the Just the News app, go download it from the Apple and Android stores. If you haven't subscribed to our daily newsletter, it's like getting a 50-story newsletter every morning in your inbox when you wake up with your cup of coffee. Go to justthenews.com/newsletter to subscribe to that. That's free. In fact, the app is free as well. Two great ways to experience Just the News every day of the week. All right, we'll be back tomorrow. Until then, God bless you and have a great, great evening. At Just the News, we break the stories others in the media ignore or are too afraid to tell. We did it on Russia collusion, Hunter Biden, and the security and intelligence failures that preceded January 6th. Our stories have real impact and reach because we stick to the facts. I'm John Solomon. You can help me expand our honest, unvarnished, and unbiased reporting by becoming a premium member at Just the News. You'll get an ad-free experience and exclusive member-only access to events, and you'll be helping us dig up more truth. Join today at justthenews.com/subscribe.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.